Hey there, Freedom Fighters. My name is Andrew Warner. I'm the founder of Mixergy, where I interview entrepreneurs about how they built their businesses. And as I've said all along, my goal is to do these interviews for an audience of people who are building companies who will then come back here and do interviews themselves. And joining me today is someone who was listening to my interviews, and he actually did more than that. He followed up with at least one of my guests, used a lot of what he heard in these interviews, and just has built a company that is now so big that I'm lucky that I get to have him on here to talk about how he did it. His name is Matt Sims. He is the founder of Simplicity Designs. It's a service business that helps organizations get out of their own way and scale. He intentionally doesn't want me to call it a consulting company. I'm going to find out why. And there's a lot that they do that I think that companies like, frankly, ours, and if you're listening to me and you're running a company, maybe you can use. We're going to find out how he built up the service business, what happened when he realized that just charging people was not enough, how he's getting clients, how he's working with them, and so much more thanks to two phenomenal companies. The first, if you need a website hosted, go check them out. It's called HostGator. And the second, if you're trying to get strangers to understand what your company is and then lead them into a sales process, there's no better process, no better software than ClickFunnels, but I'll tell you about both those later. First, Matt. Good to have you here.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
What's the revenue?
$4.5
million.
Yes.
Canadian.
Yes.
Okay. how much of that is cash versus equity in businesses?
No. So I'm only talking about the cash part of the business, like the revenue part of the business. I'm not talking about the balance sheet here at all. So wow. That's different. Yeah.
Before we talked, I asked you if you had an example of a company that we could hear to understand what you do, and you told me about one that I didn't even realize was a thing. Do you remember which one?
Yeah, the chimney sweeping company. It's great fun. I didn't know there were still chimney sweeping.
I had no idea.
Yeah, they still exist. It's very fun.
So yeah, tell me, what did they come to you with, and what happened?
So they came as a small family business in a rural part of Nova Scotia. Just the type of companies that we love to help when we can. You know, a little bit of background on me. I'm the grandson of a first generation entrepreneur, a roofer. And so whenever we get these wonderful rural entrepreneurs, blue collar, roll your sleeves up, go to work, family businesses, they just kind of melt your heart. And so they came to us and basically with the classic problem of running around in circles, working very, very, very hard, but not feeling like they're getting much of a benefit and really not sure they wanted any of their children to take over the business because it's just a lot of hard work and a lot of headaches.
And that's basic. That's one of the things that you do. You help people figure out why they're not making as much money as they should, what they could do to adjust their businesses, even help them figure out their business model. And then you help them systemize it so that they can continue to grow it without having to figure out every day brand new what to do, right?
I'm going to clip that and put that as our new marketing line right there. That's exactly it. Yeah.
So then what was the problem when you analyzed their business? What did you find was going on?
Well, it's a classic problem of scale that most organizations face. They quote jobs and they do this cost plus margin, which is a terrible way to price jobs, but we'll get to that later, I'm sure. But they have a theory of how much they're going to make off of each job. And then they go to work hard and it doesn't work out because you never can get as many jobs as done in a week as you'd like to. And so
they were making money on each job because they said, here's the cleaning equipment. Here's the hours, the price for each hour of our people's time. Let's add all those expenses up, add a little bit on top of it for profit. And that's what they were charging. The problem was they didn't have enough jobs so that even if each one of these jobs was profitable, they still overall were losing money. That's what
the classic case here is that they had customers dying for them to come to them, but couldn't get them all scheduled in. And so constantly falling behind on planning and scheduling meant they were running the milk run all over the place, getting four cleans in a day. And so as soon as we work with them a bit to help them understand the scheduling process and that being the number one constraint in their business,
you understood that they had more people who wanted to work with them than they could handle. And the limitation wasn't that they didn't have enough time to do it. It was just they weren't booking these people properly.
Yep, you got it.
Got it. And so if they book more people properly, each booking is profitable on its own. So a combination of more bookings with their existing profitability per booking means that they were going to do well. They were going to make a profit.
Think about it. You got the same 8 to 12 hours in a day that you're going to go at this, but no customer wants to pay for you to drive. And so if you're spending half or three quarters of your day driving and the other chunk doing work, or if you can set it up properly with a little bit more foresight and you can get more cleans in because of the geography that you're putting, mapping them, then, you know, it works out really well. And that's a simple process thing. That's just a matter of understanding an 8-week schedule and how to get people in.
And so is that you just knowing that there's software out there that will help them schedule based on locations, or is it something more than that?
Well, this is fun because the software is a Google Calendar and a spreadsheet. So software is a huge mistake for most companies, to be quite blunt.
So how are you helping them figure out that in the morning they're going to one part of town, in the afternoon they're going way clear across town? What happens if they just book everyone who's in the same area on the same day? How did you help systemize that?
So first, you got to back up to understand the business and go, okay, where's the number one constraint? And so you find out the constraint is they have more jobs than they can possibly do and they can't get enough in. So we land on scheduling. When you get to scheduling, there's a methodology, a time-honored methodology, Lean Six Sigma. It dives in. It uses the DMAIC framework: define, measure, analyze, improve, control. It walks you through a series of models to help you build a better process for doing something. So most people fumble their way through a better way of doing it. There is rigor in a model, a series of models that ask a better question, right? I mean, I was to turn, and people don't understand the difference between in and on work, right? So in the business, I'm going as fast as I can, doing it the way I know how, run. And then eventually there's always one constraint that's driving you. So then I've got to figure out what is the one constraint I got to work on the business. This is when I got to slow way down and I got to ask a whole different set of questions. The brain that allows you to operate so quickly with habits it lies to you when you try to change those habits.
Okay.
So you need a different framework for asking questions. Let me ask you a simple question. Let me ask you a quick one.
Yeah.
What color is a yield sign?
Yellow.
Yeah. Okay. It's been white with red trim since 1984.
Okay.
We asked the Department of Transportation what color is a yield sign. They said yellow as well.
Wow.
You asked this, it's in Daniel Kahneman's Thinking Fast and Thinking Slow. The reality is I need you to slow down and realize that a yield sign's not yellow. And the reason you said yellow is this. You went yield, caution, yellow. It's the pictures in your head. That's how we're driven.
Okay.
If we solve problems using yellow yield signs, we'll screw it up all the time.
Meaning what we're doing is coming up with the instinctive right answer that's completely correct, even though every rational every reason for it to be correct. So there's every reason for the yield sign to be yellow, right? We're used to yellow being the warning sign, even on a traffic light. And so, of course, got it. All right. I get a sense of how you work. Let's get a sense of how you got here. You were starting to mention your parents. You told our producer that you watched your dad work for Procter & Gamble growing up. What did he do for Procter & Gamble, and how'd you get to see him?
Well, this is a fascinating story. My dad, and I didn't really watch him work. That's a bit of a misnomer. I was, nothing when we went out there. I was one when we moved to Grand Prairie, Alberta. But Grand Prairie, Alberta, out of the original Fortune 500 companies, only 11% remain. Okay, so only 65 of the original Fortune 500 remain. One of them is Procter & Gamble.
Okay.
The reason Procter & Gamble is still there is they are one of these high-performing organizations that continues to reinvent itself. They stuck a mill in the middle of nowhere, Grand Prairie, Alberta. So Grand Prairie, Alberta is north of Edmonton. I mean, in 1980, that was north of civilization. So pretty much at the Arctic. I'm exaggerating a bit, but pretty much there. So they did that so that they could open a mill and hire only women, farmers, students, and the bare necessity of technical knowledge. And the reason that is they didn't want anybody saying, it's not my job. And so what my dad didn't realize is he picks this job out of university as a graduate of chemical engineering, and he stumbles into Procter & Gamble's beta test facility for high-performing organizations. It's just pure luck, gets there. We go there and he starts learning all about modern management systems as a 22-year-old fresh out of university.
Okay.
You couple that with the background of my grandfather and being the roofer and my dad understanding entrepreneurialism and entrepreneurial thought. And what you end up with is just an amazing combination of knowledge that he then takes with him for the rest of his career before we started our company.
And what does he do after working for Procter & Gamble?
So he goes to every stinky mill town across Canada. We go to three or four more stops along the way. And then he lands at JDI. So he lands at JDI is JD Irving. Okay. For most listening to your podcast, they'll have no clue who that is.
I'm Googling them right now. I have no idea.
Yeah, if you look them up, they're one of the richest families in Canada, one of the richest families in the world. And they basically grew on vertical integration. So for obvious reasons, I can't share a whole lot of what he did inside there, but I can say that he was instrumental in part of the team that brought modern management systems first to a mill and then to all 60 some odd small and medium sized businesses that the Irving family owns.
Ah, okay. So he learns modern management in this experimental place at Procter & Gamble.
Correct.
He then takes it to other businesses.
Yeah.
He sees how it works. And then at some point he says, you know what? It's time for me to start my own company. Why did it take him so long to do that?
Well, I think, you know, listen, starting your own company is a risky venture. And it's not for the faint of heart. And I don't suggest anybody do it alone. Because it will expose everybody. I think that he was really enjoying the climb of the corporate ladder, and he had a father. Let's be honest. He grew up in a house with a father who ran his own business, and it's damn hard. And he watched my grandfather grow the business,
yep,
and then blow it up and yep, bring it right back down to two trucks. And, you know, my grandfather's passed away now, but I'll share something extremely personal on this. My grandfather once told me, he said, listen, I lost 10 years of my life to stress, booze, and pills.
Okay.
He goes, you're going on this adventure, don't do that as well. Don't do that. Like, it killed me. And I don't remember some of those years. So my father watched that as a very young man. And with my grandfather's encouraging and with my grandfather's support, went and got an education and got the corporate job. And my grandfather always said, listen, that's a better place to be. Don't start your own business.
And still, you did talk to our producer. And one of the things that he noticed was that you said that your dad worked for, quote, the man. And you knew he didn't want to do this. Talk about that.
Well, I think what you get to is, I mentioned the 60 some odd businesses that were within the Irving family. Mm-hmm. So he was getting to a point on year 8 in his position as vice president of organizational change, where he's headed back to the same businesses. And okay, there comes a point where in your 50s, you start asking questions about your legacy and you start going, what behind? And we had been going on trips for the previous 5-6 years, my brother, myself, and my father, and talking about the state of Atlantic Canada, the state of economy, the economy, and going, you know, I wish that organizations just understood how easy and simple running a business can be, or at least how easy finding the problems can be. And it doesn't have to be as hard. It doesn't have to be as hard. And so we schemed and talked and all that kind of fun stuff. But my brother and I were both, you know, in retrospect, probably too young to do anything meaningful with him at that point. And so it just got to a point where he called me one day out of the blue and said, I'm thinking about a change. If I started this, would you start it with me at the same time? And would you leave your PhD, and come do this and come home? I was in the middle of the country. He was on the East Coast. And I said, you know what? Yeah, let's do this. Let's do this.
What were you thinking you were going to do with your life?
Well, that changed about every 18 minutes before I landed in this one.
Really?
Yeah.
You were considering? Because you were going through a PhD. That's pretty intense.
It is. But I was doing everything I could through those 7 years not to finish it. I was doing everything else that was interesting. But, you know, I've got 70, 80 pages of the dissertation finished. But it's been 7 years, and I don't think I'll go back. But let's see. I have an education degree. I taught high school. I taught in Korea. I did professional photography. If you can imagine this smiling face photographing your wedding, probably not. But I did that. I did wedding photography. I did graphic design. Yeah. Then I ended up running research centers and writing books and that kind of fun stuff. And I always found myself in positions of organizing people with a common goal. And I figured that anybody's going to run a business should go run a volunteer center first. Because if they'll show up and work for free, mm-hmm, you'll probably convince them when you're paying them a salary.
And that kind of connects in with, I guess your PhD was in social military history. Is that right?
Yes, it is. Yeah.
What's the social part? I understand military history and I can see how that comes into play here. What's the social part?
Well, it's funny. The social part actually comes in a lot more because I looked at that's a long title because all PhDs are, you know, PhD is just understanding more and more about less and less, right on the edges of knowledge. So what I was really driving at is the role of sport and gender and nationality and the First World War Canadian soldier. So looking at how that all comes together. I never really looked at military doctrine, et cetera, but I have looked at command and control and military and peace versus war and stuff.
That is very specific though. By the way, I've been looking up the Irving family. I guess was Casey Irving the patriarch? He was.
Yep.
So there is a biography about him. I thought, all right, this guy looks really interesting. The whole family's fascinating. Let's go find the biography on Amazon. It's not on Amazon. It is on Amazon Canada. So weird when you can't get a book in a country because it's limited to another country. I've had that happen as I travel the world doing marathons. I want to read books about the people who are significant in each country. I can't get the books here. I have to, you know.
You gotta buy them there. Yep.
That's what happens there. Strange.
Yeah. And there's all kinds of business tycoons in Canada that are fascinating to research.
Yeah. It's not like we're so far away that we can't get it shipped here, or at least even the Kindle version sometimes is not available.
Well, we can get you a copy of it. That book's not terribly fascinating to read, but we can get you a copy if you want to.
But you've heard of that book.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Wow. Okay. Is there one that you think that I should read to get to know Canadian entrepreneurs, Canadian business people? What should I be looking for?
Well, if you want to get to know entrepreneurs on the East Coast, there's a great book called The Codfathers. COD. The Codfathers. And it'll tell you about all of the major business tycoons on the East Coast of Canada. Everything from the Irvings to the McCains to Moosehead Beer, the Sobey Empire, those ones.
I can't find it. Oh, yes, I can. There we go. The Codfathers, Lessons from the Atlantic Business Elite.
Yeah.
Oh, that one's so hard to get. Even in Amazon Canada, it's a $45 book because...
Oh, yeah, no, it's an expensive one, absolutely. But it's a fascinating book. It's wonderful. One of my favorite lines in there goes something along the lines of this. Those from the East Coast are absolutely fed up with the bullshit of Bay Street. And most East Coast business women, men, can't get through a sentence without cursing. So I've done well so far.
Yeah, impressive. Man, I love that. Actually, I love getting exposed to different entrepreneurs, different forms of business. I feel we're really narrowing down on all of us reading the same book, studying the same people. And no wonder our ideas aren't that diverse. Okay, so your dad comes to you and says, do you want to come in? You say, okay, I'm great. I'm in. Let's do it. It's you, your dad, and who else who decide to form this company?
My brother joins us as well. And a good friend of mine from for a very, very long time, Jason Freak, we basically part of the family. So four of us start the company. Jason's got the IT background. He was an enterprise architect before he joined us. And then I had the teaching background. My brother had the Lean Six Sigma background, and my father had the management systems. And helping make choice in the largest of companies to the smallest of companies.
Okay, so now you're ready to go out there and get customers. The first customers came from? Let's talk about the very first one.
Very first one.
Yeah.
Okay, so very first one ended up being the government of New Brunswick and actually ended up being the education system in New Brunswick. And that remains my favorite client. And now you're going, what the heck does a business that scales companies do with the education system? I'm sure. But what we teach works even better in the social sector and the not-for-profit because any high-performing organization is a purpose-driven organization. Doesn't matter whether it's Southwest, doesn't matter whether it's Southwest Airlines, whether it's P&G, the ones that really get this basically run with a social mission. And so the education system is pretty easy to get a social mission statement out of.
So you help them. Well, what's the big issue then that they have and how do you help them solve it?
Well, this is a very, very, very complicated system. You got to think about one head office in Fredericton. You got to think about three districts. Those superintendents don't report to the deputy minister. They report to an outside council. And then you're thinking about 97 schools that they administer across a bilingual province. This is only the Francophone side. So here you have a Scottish Anglophone family with us using our broken French, working to help the Francophone education system improve. And they were one of the worst performing. What's that?
Improve how? What were they trying to do?
You only get the real improvement when you get to kids doing better in school.
Got it. Bet. All right. And so that's the first job that you took on, and it's because of your dad's connections that you got it.
Well, it's because of my dad's connections with both teaching a class at the University of New Brunswick on technology mm-hmm. management and entrepreneurship, and helping architect the management system that is still in place at the government of New Brunswick today.
Okay. Let me take a moment to talk about my first sponsor. And I know that you are curious about ClickFunnels.
I am. Yeah.
What is it that you're thinking about using ClickFunnels for?
Well, I'm very curious on how it can help me understand what kind of impact we're having with our non-existent marketing today, but hopefully our marketing in the future.
So here's what I would, well, before I even suggest how you could use ClickFunnels, what's the lowest price product that you sell?
We have a 5-day introduction to performance excellence, which is a $10,000 course.
Oh, wow. Okay. So you're not at a place where you can do this on the cheap. Here's what I would suggest, though.
Not yet.
So here's what I suggest. One of the things that I've noticed is, I remember talking to a few of my friends who've written books, who got them at the airport. And I said, so is that revenue meaningful? And I said, not really. But the person who works for the person who hires our consulting company is going through an airport, picking up the book, reading it, and then going to the boss and saying, we need this. We need this in our company. Bring their consultant in, or bring this author in as a speaker, and do it. So what I would suggest for you is, there are people like me who are curious about your process. We could come read your website and then disappear on your website completely. The problem with that is that we'll attribute the lessons that we got to a Google search, and we'll say, you know what? Google teaches you a lot. What would be better is for someone like me who says, you know, I heard this guy, Matt. I heard that he's got a process for me figuring out why I'm spending so much time on my business and not getting any results. I'm going to go look him up. I go look him up. Instead of a page that will give me a quick overview and let me disappear and thank Google for finding it, I'd suggest you go to ClickFunnels and you create a page that it gets my email address in exchange for you giving me a simple guide. Now, at first, you may not have a long PDF. You may not have a long ebook. But if it's just like the 10 core principles, that would be enough. If it's an audio thing, especially since you're here, if it's something that anyone who's listening to us can follow up and just hear your best presentation, that's enough to get into your world. And when you go to ClickFunnels, they'll make it really easy for you to create a page that looks good on both desktop and mobile, and that gets people to subscribe because they test these pages across lots of different platforms. Now, that's a first step, Matt. The second step, though, is to see if the person will buy something. And with ClickFunnels, as soon as you get their email address, you could have a confirmation page and move on. But one of the things that I like to do is to say, let's see if we can find something to sell to this person to just get a sense that they are really committed. And it might be maybe a recording of a more intense program that you did. It might be maybe, I know that what one of the things you guys do is you offer a consulting call. I'm on a page here with April McLeod.
McLeod, yep.
McLeod. It's not even like an unpopular name. I always have to screw up that name. April McLeod. Where it might be for $20, for $50, you can do a coaching call to see how this will work in your business. And now you're starting to collect email addresses, and you have a way of identifying who is really interested and who is not, who has the budget and who doesn't. And the thing that I like about ClickFunnels is you get to keep tweaking these things. And maybe what you end up discovering is that there are enough people who go through this that you're making enough money that maybe you start buying ads on LinkedIn, offering your guide. Anyway, all this stuff takes a lot of work. We could code it up ourselves, but we've discovered that if we go to ClickFunnels, they give us pages that they've tested across their platforms that are really well designed. And when we have a quick idea, or they have a quick idea for what works, we just drag and drop it on our page. All right. I should close this ad out by saying, if you're interested in them, if anyone out there is interested in them, you should go to clickfunnels.com/Mixergy. When you do, you'll be supporting me, which is nice. Thank you for me. But also, you'll be getting the funnels that we have used ourselves. And I've done over $1 million with one of their funnels, go figure. And so you'll get our funnel. And they'll also give you free use of their software if you use it. A lot of benefits for you, and a big benefit for me if you use clickfunnels.com/Mixergy. Yep. All right. How long did it take you to work with that one client, to work with the education department?
It was a 4-year, 5-year engagement. We're still there in some degrees as they mature the management system. I mean, this is not long-term sustainable improvement is not an overnight fix, which is sometimes difficult for people to swallow in this world of instant gratification.
But do you give them any quick results, anything that lets absolutely. Them know we're on the... You work that into your system.
Absolutely. I mean, you got to come way out decide where the constraint is, go deep and fix that constraint and show tangible results either with the student, with the client, and then come back out and go, okay, are we still picking that? And, you know, one of the most important things that we do with a client is make sure that we understand where they're headed. And by that, I mean, you know, when we talk about the strategic process, we talk, a lot of people do strategic plans. And what they end up being are spots, right? Strategic plans on the top shelf, gathering dust. You get excited about them over a weekend, and then you put them up there, and then you may check on them a year from there, blow the dust off, find out whether they worked or not. It's such a waste of time because it gets people excited for nothing, because then they jump right back into the same habits over and over again. So what we help people do is go, okay, where do I want to be in the long term? As a result of that, where do I need to be in the short term? And as a result of that, what's the 90-day sprint of work in the business, on the business, and from a resource standpoint? And then the hard work of scheduling that work ahead of all the other stuff so that you actually make the changes and go there. And the reason why 90 days, people can't remember more than 90 days. If you give somebody 180, you can't do it.
That part I get. And also it means within 90 days, I'll get a result. When I'm tired, when it doesn't feel right, I could at least wait for the end of the 90 days before passing judgment versus 180 in a year is a long time.
Exactly.
The thing that I'm wondering though is when, well, I forgot what I was going to say because I was so like affirming what you just said before. I know what it is. You work with them to get that those results, right?
Before, yes, absolutely.
I'm calling you guys a consulting company. And you said, I hate consulting companies. Why do you hate that name, consulting?
Well, a couple of reasons. Number one, with all due respect to those who do it well, there are many who are terrible, who offer you reports, not results. And many have a bad name and they've earned it because they don't stick around and ensure the habit that you've changed in the organization sticks and continues to get results and continues to improve. And so we purposely said immediately from the beginning, we will not use the name because it's a disservice to what we do.
Because a consulting company consults with you. It's obviously not true, but the knock against McKinsey is that the companies will spend tens of thousands of dollars on them to get a report that just justifies what they want to do anyway.
Correct.
Getting that report that either just justifies and affirms what you want to do anyway, or that then gives you a whole bunch of work internally to do. And when you're already struggling, which is why you called in a consulting company to also have another list of things to do, it's overwhelming. And so you intentionally said, we're not just going to tell you what to do, advise you what to do. We're going to work with you to do it. And so when you're working with your first clients, what kind of work do you do to make sure that they get the results that you're advising them on?
Well, I mean, so you heard a little bit of it. We get into the choice process and we choose the 90-day sprint together. We both make sure that makes sense. Then once we get to the 90-day sprint, there's a bunch of things that need to be done. And there's one thing, just like I went to the yellow yield sign, you need to pick one thing you're working on the business. Once you get that one thing, we're going to roll up and systemically improve that for the business you want to be. So if you're a $1 million business, but you want to become a $10 million business, you need to build a sales funnel that supports a $10 million business. You don't want to fix the sales funnel 12 times on your way to the $10 million. So you got to systemically fix that process. And so we will work with you to define the problem, measure how you're currently doing, analyze all the possible solutions. We'll use Pareto's principle to pick the 20% that gives you 80% of the result. And then we'll put that into place. And then we'll put really good, I hate the word control, but you really put good plan, do, check, act around it so that as you find better ways to do it, we can update the process and make it better continuously.
And it's you guys doing it from the beginning, talking to your clients over and over. What is it, weekly calls, daily calls?
No, so these ones are 5 full days over 5 weeks, and then you get 2 to 3 days of execution where we literally rebuild reports, whatever it happens to be. Like, we're in there, sleeves rolled up. I've seen some of our people sweeping floors to be able to put tape down. Depends if we're in a manufacturing facility. If we're with a knowledge firm, then we're sitting in there building the templates, etc. Like, it's real work. It's not the, hey, you should go do this and you should look over here and Bob's your uncle, you'll be fine. Work harder.
So the first client, we understand, was the first set of customers coming in because of your dad's connections? Is that where they came from?
I think I say this often, every business should start with a Merv. But then we immediately went
Merv and is your measured, dad.
Yeah, exactly.
Meaning, but that's Merv, somebody who comes in with connections.
I think with connections and a Rolodex and with some pedigree in what you're doing, so you can start to build the business off of that reputation.
Okay. So you know what? I've noticed in enterprise that is especially true, that every enterprise company that I've interviewed, or let's just say the majority, they have a guy who worked at a department where he was doing sales to a group of people. He had an idea for a better product for them. He'd go off and start his own company and call back the people who he worked with, or the people who he wanted to work with who he didn't have a product for back in the old company, and now they're up and running. So that's what you're suggesting here too. But you're also saying, look, if you're selling consulting service, to also have a pedigree, to also say, we have done this before. Now I'm just doing it in this business. Got it.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And the other side to this is, I think we from the beginning, like you mentioned earlier, we put skin in the game. So we want results-based pay. We don't want time-based pay.
Well, how long did that take you to get to? It seems like for a while you were charging per hour, right?
Well, with certain organizations, you have to charge per day. Like there's the mega corps that have no interest in you finding them $500,000 of savings and sharing that with you. They would prefer to pay your rate. And then you have the government organizations that, well, there's not much to share in the gains when you increase literacy rate except for 50 years later. So they would pay for that as well. But when you get to the small and micro businesses, the one thing they have none of is cash. So you now start to go, well, I know you can't afford this today, but you can't afford not to do it. So let's work together on a longer term arrangement where you pay a small amount to show you're interested, because I want your skin in the game too. And then let's share in the results. And so if it's a small enough business, we'll share on the net profit line. If it's a little bit larger, we'll share at the KPI line.
Matt, at what point did you discover smaller businesses? Because it feels like you were going after the bigger companies that your dad might have worked for or on before. And at some point he said, or you said, this is working here. Why don't we go to smaller businesses?
So that the order's a bit out of whack there, because one of the things I started doing before we started Simplicity was I was doing this with smaller businesses in Ontario. So my first client was a gym. And so I understood how this could work with smaller companies.
You went out and got gyms?
A gym, yeah.
How did you get a gym, Matt?
Well, I talked to the guy and we hit it off, and he talked to me.
Your personal gym. You're talking to the guy who runs a gym. You're asking him about his business. That's it. It's just like a friendly conversation. It wasn't you making phone calls saying, I think I could help gyms.
No. I mean, the stuff that we do is industry agnostic. So if you ask people what the biggest problem is they're facing, there's nothing more they love to do than talk about the problems they're facing.
What I mean is, I'm trying to get a sense of how you got your early customers. And it seems like it was a lot of just talking to people and seeing who could use your services, with maybe going through your dad's Rolodex. The part that's you getting clients, it wasn't super systematic. It wasn't you saying who could use this, let's target them. No.
I mean, listen, we benefited off of Merv's reputation. But it's also the outlay of him being available. So the more research you do on the Irving family, the more you're going to see that they're super private. So the fact that one of their VPs became available in a organizational design capacity, coupled with the fact that he had been teaching at UMB and been doing some outside speaking, meant we had a lot of early interest. Now, we had to translate that early interest into results. And then we had to translate those results into stories we could talk to other small and medium and micro-sized businesses about. And you know, our first year we did 1.3 million. Okay, so it was a good, really great first year. But most of that was on the back of early clients being interested and selling the stories of success and having honest, authentic conversation, business owner to business owner, about what's really going on. Because everybody's got this, you know, that surface level, it's going great. Right. But if you ask two more questions, you realize that most of it's barely held together and they're stressed as hell about something.
Like what? What kind of questions can you get? Can you ask business people, especially, to get at what's worrying them?
Yeah. I mean, what are the last 10 complaints you've had?
You mean internally? You ask a business owner.
Yeah.
What are the last 10 complaints you've had?
What's the last 10 complaints that you've had from your customers? What are the things that are keeping you up at night? What do you wish was better? What's the one thing that if I remove that problem for you would make life better? These are, you know, big talk, deep conversations, quick, right? And, you know, a lot of people don't take the time to listen and allow other people to reflect. And if you just ask honest, authentic questions and you come at it from, this is a tough enough world, right? It's a tough enough world and everybody's struggling with their own journey. If you give a little bit of space and ask some authentic questions about their problems, they're gonna open up.
So what about you? What was difficult about your first year? It feels like the first year was just happy-go-lucky. You ended up with over $1 million in sales. You ended up with good customers. What was it?
Yeah, I mean, we're not immune to the problems that face scale. Just because we teach others to scale doesn't mean you can do it easily. And I can tell you this.
Was scaling a problem for you? Or what about getting to that first million plus was not hard?
That's not hard. That wasn't hard. Because
you already had people who were interested in working with you based on your dad's reputation. Got it. Okay. Then scaling was hard for you. Talk about the difficulty in scaling, what you did to overcome it.
More is not more. More is different.
Okay.
And that's not a throwaway line. Scale is not linear. And so, you know, having two times the people doesn't mean you have two times the complication. Right. And it is very difficult to find the right talent to align. One of the biggest lessons we learned in the last 5 years is the difference between rock stars and superstars. I don't know if you've read Kim Scott's book on HR, but it's one of the best books by a mile. And she lays out this in a way that I didn't understand it till I read it and thought back. But superstars are the ones that are really, really attractive, but they're always the up and out. They're the A players, but they're also the A personalities. And so you're really attracted to what they can do for your business, but they always have something else that they want to do. Whereas the rock stars build the foundation of your organization. And for us, I would say that when you try and scale a service organization, you're scaling talent and knowledge. That's extremely hard to do. It takes us about 2 years to develop someone.
Ah, okay. So that's the problem. It wasn't bringing in more business. It was, how do we get the people who can deliver what we're promising?
Correct.
That Absolutely. Was the hardest part.
Absolutely. By a mile.
Did you make a mistake in the beginning?
We made all kinds of mistakes.
What are some of the mistakes that you made?
We weren't firm enough in the way in which we were going to onboard and train people. Mm-hmm. So our own onboarding and training process, not solid enough. So alignment on the methodology meant we had variance in delivery, right? And the customer doesn't experience your average delivery. They experience their experience. So if they had a great day with you or they had a not so great day with you, it doesn't really matter if on average you're hitting 90%. They experience the 1 in 10. So we had a real tough time training and onboarding people. We had a very difficult time figuring out how, with a bunch of people that teach other companies how to do this, how are we going to get in the room and choose one way to do it for us? That was hard.
Right. Because now you're looking at lots of different, if they're good enough to do that work, they've had enough experience having done it before, but they've done it a different way. So
now you're bringing, and when we're selling a language, you got to all say the same thing, right? When you say blue, you all have to mean blue and it has to be the same shade of blue.
And there is a clear methodology that you're employing.
Very, very clear methodology.
So why can't you just bring brand new people and say, you're going to learn our methodology and that's it?
Well, can you look at it's, you know what, whole part whole. That's a really good question. And the only reason it stumps me is because if you're going to do this, you have to have a solid understanding of business and business acumen and how it connects to financial acumen and process acumen, and then how people are motivated. There are so many diverse skill sets. And I think in the beginning we didn't give enough credit to how long. I mean, my brother and I were indoctrinated in this, whether we liked it or not, because of my father's experience. And I don't think we gave enough credit to how long it takes to learn all of the different skills, but then to be able to put them together. And can you look at any business and go, hey, there's only really three types of businesses in this world. Can you identify which one it is? Can you identify the five or seven levers of that business? Do you know how they're performing? And can you do that in your head while somebody else is telling you their problem? So you have three conversations going on, and can you get them to the right business constraint? And then when you get them there, can you fix that so that it doesn't have to be fixed again?
When you're not getting it right, do you ever get the imposter syndrome saying, how am I going to help other people scale? We're struggling here ourselves.
Oh, absolutely.
You listen, do.
You know what? The reality is scale is tough. We're not immune to that, right? And I say that, you know, we're not on the other side of that 5 million journey. So there's three distinct phases in a business. Between 0 and 1 million, you're deciding whether you want to be a real business. You got a nice lifestyle income coming in. It can be run by a technician, doesn't require a management layer. Between 1 million and 5 million, you have all the problems and overhead needs of a $5 million company, but you can't afford it. So you're stretching someone somewhere, right? And the golden number we've landed on so far is about 1.6 million. It becomes real after that. You need HR, you need proper IT systems. There's all kinds of stuff you need that you don't need before that. Back of the napkin doesn't work. Then there's the 5 million plus. Greg Crabtree writes a wonderful book called Simple Numbers, especially for your viewers in the US. It's must reading. It really is, because it talks about labor effectiveness ratio. It talks about making sure you don't violate the salary cap. It talks about why 80%+ of the businesses die between 1 and 5 million and why the black hole is between 2.5 and 3.5 million. It's the toughest part of the journey. So just because we can help others who are in different parts of that journey doesn't mean that we are immune to the problems we're going to face. And we've faced all of them. And when I sit in front of an audience, I say exactly that. Say, folks, I'm in the arena too. One of my favorite short videos is Brene Brown's retake on Teddy Roosevelt's Man in the Arena.
And YouTube video.
It's a YouTube 3-minute YouTube video. It is absolutely brilliant.
Who was it?
Brene Brown. She's the wonderful author on vulnerability. Mm-hmm. And there's a 3-minute clip of her talking about Teddy Roosevelt's Man in the Arena. Every single founder should listen to that 3 minutes.
It's called Daring Greatly, Teddy Roosevelt as read by Brené Brown.
Yeah. That
Teddy Roosevelt speech is about how he says it's not the man who's the critic who's watching the game that counts. It's the man in the arena. And
correct.
They're two different people, even though the person on the outside feels like he knows it all. And so you're saying, I'm in the arena. By the way, we mentioned another book. Kim Scott, the book that you mentioned was Radical Candor, right?
That's correct. Kim Scott, Radical Candor. Yeah. And if, you know, I'm a voracious reader. Probably read about 50 to 60 books a year, pretty conservatively, probably more. And one of the things I'll say is that it has helped me understand some things and get my head around things that I know I wouldn't have been able to without reading. Bismarck said, anybody can learn from their own experience. Any fool can learn from their own experience, but the truly wise try to learn from other people's experience so they don't have to go through it.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't mean I haven't had my own journey, but...
I'm guessing that's why you also were a member of Mixergy.
Yes, that it helps to hear others' experiences. If you want, and a few real journeys. Have you read Phil Knight's book on the founding of Nike?
What did you get out of that book? This was Shoe Dog is the name of the book we're talking Shoe about.
You know what I got out of that book? Mm-hmm. Everybody is trying to hold it together, even the best.
And he looked like he was doing so well, but there was a lot of holding it together.
Absolutely. And if you look at what I love about that book is it's 90% about the journey, the pain of trying to get to the other side. And then I love how he says, you know, if you could line it up again, would I do it all again? Yeah. What do I miss? I miss that journey. But I love that he took you through the real thing. And then the other one that's great is Ben Horowitz on the hard things about hard things.
Yeah.
And he's got a 2-page little part in there where he basically you're reading it and I'm reading it going in and he's saying, you know, this is hard and you might not make it and all that kind of fun stuff. And you're waiting for him to come through the other end and go, you know, but you can do it. And he doesn't end that way. He just ends with, and you're probably not going to make it. And it's like, oh, well, that's uplifting. That's fantastic.
I like their style a lot. I actually listened to that book as an audiobook, which was unusual for me, but boy, did I enjoy it. It was really good.
Unbelievable.
Right, I'll talk about my second sponsor. It's a company called HostGator. And I've got to tell you, I remember one of the things that I discovered was my friend Chris Luck. He had these pages. It just looked freaking beautiful. And I said, Chris, how are you constantly throwing these pages up? And he said, well, go check out this thing called ThemeForest. Now, ThemeForest is not a sponsor, but I took a look and I realized that these beautiful themes for WordPress, and there are tons of people in the marketplace. I interviewed the founder of ThemeForest about how he built up that marketplace. And I realized all these different designs that I admire could be mine. Same thing for somebody who's listening to me. WordPress is such a robust platform that if you go to hostgator.com/Mixergy, let me say that clearly. HostGator.com/Mixergy. You go and set up a WordPress site. Then you go to a site like ThemeForest and you just start going through all the different themes that you have, that they have, and look for the one that you like. Or you say, you know what? I just want a one pager. You go do a Google search, one page WordPress site, one page WordPress theme, excuse me, is even better. And you even add the word free to the a bunch of themes so that if you have a website that you need, maybe it's one just saying what you do. Maybe it's one for a new company that you're going to launch. Just go and find the theme that's beautiful. implement it on a WordPress site that's hosted by HostGator. Inexpensive, very quick, just works on all these different devices, desktop, phone, etc. iPad is my favorite. And you're ready to go. And so if you're looking to start a website for anything, whether it's a new business, a new product category, just a new random idea, a hobby even, the fact that you create a page for it makes it more significant. There's so many people, by the way, Matt, now that I'm running marathons all over the world, so many people who said, I run marathons, I do this. It's the people who have a website for their journey that for some reason feel like they have done something bigger, like the guy who did an ultra marathon on every continent. I just met him. Joel Runyon. The fact that he's got a website where I can go and see all this makes it feel like he really did an epic thing, not just something in his memory. Anyway, so whatever it is, take it to HostGator.com/Mixergy. Go find that beautiful theme online. There are tons of them for free. And if you go to HostGator.com/Mixergy, you'll get unmetered bandwidth, unlimited email addresses. You'll get great tech support from them. And if you don't like them, you can always take your site and move on somewhere else. But frankly, you're going to like them because their price is right. And WordPress with themes that are available everywhere is just an easy way to get going.
How are you enjoying the marathons?
I do love them. I love them to the point where when I sold my first company, all I did all day was ride my bike. Like it would be hours and hours of riding my bike and then going out at night. Now I'm thinking, maybe this is all I want to do. But no, there is one other thing that I'm really enjoying. The guy from Lyft 99, he's one of the founders of Pipe Drive. He invited me to Estonia. He said, come on out. I'm going to introduce you to entrepreneurs here. I sat down at Lyft 99's office. First of all, it's a beautiful office because it's a little bit messy. They've got mugs from all these Estonian companies that made it big. That who knew they were Estonian companies? Who even knew that how big they were? They've got plaques for all these companies that hit certain financial milestones. They've got random robots, random mobility devices, just all around this co-working space. And they invited me to talk to different entrepreneurs. And I got to talk to this guy who created a company called Bolt. They're competing with Amazon competing with Uber. I said, how are you competing with Uber? They have a lot of money. He goes, because I have no money, it's my advantage. He goes, look, a bunch of people over to South Africa to launch their thing. I think it was a couple of hundred people. And all this money that went in, he said, we just sent a PowerPoint. We found somebody in South Africa. We sent him a PowerPoint. Here's our process. Now our app is working. Go and find drivers. As soon as you find drivers, the passengers will follow. If you keep the price low, then they'll start talking about. Anyway, he's competing. It was brilliant. And what I realized, Matt, was I still love talking to entrepreneurs, hearing those stories, pushing them to a point where they're a little uncomfortable at times, but getting something that's useful for my audience and also for me. Give me that plus running. I don't need anything else in my life. That's the big thing that I've discovered.
We have some similarities there. I've got two marathons down, five to go on the other five.
You're
going to
do every marathon, every continent, I mean.
Yep.
Wow.
Headed for it. Yep.
Which ones have you done?
I did the original one in Athens, and then then I've done LA, and now I'm waiting to find which continent I'm going to go to next, but I'm hoping to get it done here in the next 4 years. The official.
While you're going around, are you looking to have some kind of experience?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm looking right now at the one on the Japanese island of Okinawa, where the mental model of Ikigai comes from, which is that North Star, because they have the most amount of people who live to be 100 per thousand, 26 per thousand. So I want to go see what is it that's going on. Island that has people sort of purpose driven and keep active and enjoying life.
So how are you going to get to do that? How do you get to understand that? I know I get to go and do interviews, and in those interviews I get to find things out. What's the process that lets you get these people to be open?
Well, I've got a couple different networks and a couple different interests. So I'm part of the Entrepreneurs Organization. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that organization.
Yep, yeah, absolutely. EO. Uh-huh.
Right. And that is a wonderful global network where you can pretty much open up any chapter and get an authentic conversation. And that's not meant for business development for me. That's when I want to understand a new culture and a new place and what it's like to do business there and what it's like to live there. And
so you're going to get introductions to people who know what you're curious about and know that you've got some substance to you. And then you'll just have dinner with them, drinks with them, pop into their office, got it, and get to ask those questions.
Yeah. So it gets to be pretty quick when you have that network. And I firmly believe that every entrepreneur needs a network that isn't friends, family, and fools. You need a bunch of other business owners that you can have real discussion with. It's a tough enough journey, and it will expose every one of your flat sides.
So how do you get those conversations to be meaningful and not just be hangout sessions where you're talking about life and it's interesting, but not useful?
So EO has a pretty good,
The forum.
Yeah, the form, but also even when you're with non-form members, you generally keep it to what they call or what we call shit that matters. And that's basically the 2.5% of stuff that's so good and the 2.5% of stuff that's so bad that you really couldn't share it in any other arena. It doesn't fit in those 2.5 on either side. It doesn't really belong in the conversation.
So Matt, what you're saying is the fact that at EO, the only reason people get together with EO is to have conversations about their real problems, the stuff that matters, with other entrepreneurs who are also going through this. It sets up a context of it. Right. Got Absolutely. It. Got it.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's talk about, by the way, the hardest one is Antarctica. I needed to get this all done within a year. It took me forever to get to Antarctica. I think I've got it all nailed down. I found this group that's got a chartered plane going there for some adventure. I'm going on the plane with them. I'm running a marathon there on my own. I highly recommend going and putting yourself on a wait list for one. Have you done this for an Antarctic trip?
Not yet. No.
If I would have done it before, it would have been maybe $15,000. Now I'm paying $26,000 just to get to Antarctica. And then I've got all these other
costs. Most absurd one. I'm saving it for the end, but now you're telling me that I'm going to have to wait 2 years. So I'm probably going to have to
That's why you should just put yourself on a wait list. And it's like $300 to hold on to the spot. Nothing significant.
Yeah, no, that's worth it for sure.
And no amount of negotiation let me make that work. All right. Talk to me about the woman who came to you. Who wanted to grow her company, and because of what happened there, you guys changed and decided to go after equity. Can you say a little bit about what she did and what you guys did for her?
Yeah, so she ran a health services company, a lot like physiotherapists, and basically she tells her story pretty openly. She was 15 years of struggling through running a services company. She tells the classic story of every second Thursday having a crappy bottle of wine open, checking the bank account to make sure she could afford payroll. And she heard Merv at one of the sessions and then came to one of our early sessions. And this is where we built a model on how to work with small and micro companies. And it takes a lot more coaching at the strategic and level. But what we did is we went in there and the same thing over and over again, quite frankly. We helped them with a scheduling process. Then we helped them make more gross margin per file. And we connected it all to their purpose, which is getting people back to living. You know, the quicker time that they're off on disability and go from disability to back to work, they're happier, et cetera. And so we helped her do that. And, you know, the consulting model, you get paid while you talk. You get paid to yak. And it's a good living, don't get me wrong. But it doesn't build long-term equity and long-term wealth. And we looked at it and went, this model's flawed. This model relies on building people and selling your time. And so that's when we started to look deeply into equity acquisitions.
As I understand it, she got an offer for $5 million for her business. You said to her, am I saying something I shouldn't be?
No, she got it's not 5 million, but she got an offer for an undisclosed amount.
Okay, so she got an offer for some significant amount of money.
Yeah.
You guys said, hey, you know what? You should reconsider this. This is like, you can continue to grow the business. She said, I think I'm done. She ended up selling her business. And you looked and said, well, she sold it too soon. But actually, we are the ones who made the bigger mistake because we helped her go from a few million to a few million more. And we got nothing from that beyond, you know, just
the fee.
A fee. And that's when you decided we're going to start to take equity from these smaller businesses.
Yeah, I mean, that's it. We started to look and say, we're going to get into the equity game.
Okay.
And we have a couple positions right now, and we're at the final, due diligence takes forever. So we're at the final, it's one thing to agree to a contract to help one another, and it's another thing to agree to get married. And so, and that's what a shareholders agreement is. And so we're at the final end of two of them. One looks like it's going to go through, and another one, I don't know. If you had asked me 2 months ago, I would have said it was a 90% chance, and now maybe I'll give you a 30% chance because it keeps slipping to the right.
What types of businesses are you taking equity in versus just a cut of profits?
So it really is opportunity based. And what I mean by that is if the owners want to get out and we have two of them that want to sell, one's old, then we look at how do we buy? And if the owner wants to stay in for a long time, we look at how do we share in the gains long enough that it makes it worth our while to go through the initial pain, because it's difficult.
What's your relationship with Warren Rustin?
So he's a great talker at EO. One of the best people they bring in. And Warren Rustin,
he's from Modern Ad. Is that right? Modern Ad Media.
Well, that's on there now. I mean, he was the chief scheduler for President Gerald Ford. He then went on to flip multiple companies. The last company he took from several hundred million to several billion, and then flipped it. So, I mean, you're talking about and you look at this guy, he's probably one of the most influential individuals that really made me re-examine what I found to be important in life.
So what's your connection with him? I'm looking him up right now. Now I'm on his Wikipedia
page. The only connection is that I've spent some time with him, and his talks have deeply impacted me. We spent an afternoon at his house, and I've heard him speak a number of times, and he's coming back to Halifax to speak again later on. So it's not a deep personal connection, but it is it's a connection through EO.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah. Just his stuff has been, some people affect you because of long-term and deep relationships, and some affect you because of what they say in the moment you need to hear it.
What is it? Be specific. What did you need to hear that he told you?
Yeah. So you know what he said, why don't you take a look and define success for yourself? Why do you exist personally?
Okay.
And you know what? I'm glad that you hit on that, because too many business owners don't ask this question. And then they drive everybody else crazy because it changes every day. And so they change their business with it. And so have you really sat down, and it's not different than the strategic process, except it's deeply personal. Have you actually sat down and said, why do I exist? And I use that Ikigai model that I told you about earlier. And then I use the four burners of life: personal, professional, family, and community.
So why do you exist?
Personally? Yeah. I mean, I could share that Ikigai with you, but essentially, what do I love to do? I love to solve and be part of solving complex problems. What does the world need? The world needs sustainable businesses. What can I get paid for? I can get paid for solving those problems and being part of the gains. So that's an upper end one. And then I've taken the time, which would be much longer than we have left in this show, but to write my obituary from the four perspectives that I just laid out: community, family and friends, personal and professional. And literally from those four perspectives, what do you want to be able to say about it?
Now get enough meaning to care about more than you would have cared before, to get more out of yourself, and then to say no to more things.
Yeah, that's the short way, but let me just go one step further, driving the bucket list conversation. So between those three models, Ikigai, the four perspectives, and the bucket list, it drives the type of focus in my life that I did not have when we started this company. So, being in the process of constantly reflecting on that, I carry this lovely little coin. I'm not sure if people can see it, but it's got a mountain on it. Basically, it says, it's one of Ray Dalio's classic quotes. This is pain plus reflection equals progress. People don't reflect enough, business owners.
Be more specific about your life. When you weren't as focused, what did you do that now, because you are focused, you don't do anymore?
Well, I don't drink anymore at all.
Okay. How much were you drinking before?
It was on and off. Call it binge alcoholism. Call it
enough just to party, but not enough to cause damage in your life, or did it?
Not any significant damage, but enough that I didn't enjoy that part of me.
Okay. And so you gave that up, and as a result, what happened?
I just changed that habit in for marathons. But that's, I use that as one example. The other example is, where are you spending your time? Where am I spending my time? If you want to drive,
where were you spending your time before, and where are you spending your time now? Give me like a specific.
Spending my time saying yes to absolutely everything that I thought could maybe benefit.
Like what's a thing that you look back and go, why did I say yes to that?
I know where you want to go specific with this. It's probably better if I talk about what I'm focused on now.
Okay.
As a result, I mean, because I was literally saying yes to everything and burning myself out. But if you get to
someone just who was really nice to me at a dinner said, hey, can you talk to this person who I work with? I said, yeah, of course, let's do it. This morning I got up and I talked to somebody for half an hour that I could have used for something really productive, because he saw me somewhere and he said, hey, can you help me out with this thing? And I said, yeah, of course I could do it. And then I found myself in that case saying at the end of the call, why don't we schedule another one? What am I saying yes to it?
Right.
Right. And so you don't do that anymore because you're so clear on your focus.
Very, very clear. I've got three main focuses in my life. I got a young daughter. Okay. And you're taking my only night this week that I won't be home to her. But I give one night up a week. That's it. I don't give four up anymore. I give one. And I get home and I see her for that 2-hour window, chuck the phone aside, put on some music, She's 16 months. It's awesome. And that is one crystal clear focus. The other crystal clear focus for me is family beyond that. My father has been diagnosed with a rare illness. My grandfather died 6 months ago with in a head-on collision, the roofer. And I'll tell you that I started doing this 2 years ago. And here's what I'll tell you. I went and did things in the last 2 years that I wouldn't have done, like going to spend time with him in Zephyr Hills, Florida. So you know where Zephyr Hills is. I can see that smile.
I just happened to look him up and go, what does this have to do with it? Just as I'm Googling, I came up with it just now in this interview. What is Zephyr Hills? What does it mean?
It's a place. It's known for water, but really it is 45 minutes outside of Tampa, and it's where my parents, or it's where my grandparents love to go for their winters. Right.
Okay.
And you know, as there's nothing there for someone like me, but they were there.
So we
made a concerted effort. We bought a trailer beside their trailer so my father could go down. And I have this wonderful video of my daughter in a, you know, everybody has a bouncy swing when they're younger because you need 15 minutes apiece. So you put them in the bouncy swing and they jump up and down. My grandfather's jumping beside her. And that moment, quite frankly, wouldn't have happened had I not got my shit squared away and said, what's important and how do I schedule my time to do it? So, you know, running that marathon in Athens would not have happened. Doing the training would not have happened. So here it is. I help grow businesses and help solve complex problems and take equity. That's fun. I have a family focus and it gets calendared and scheduled. And I have a personal focus, which is the marathons. And that's basically my life right now. And that'll change. I re-examine it and re-look at it every 90 days and do the same thing. So.
All right. I appreciate you coming on here. And I've got to say, one of the things that I noticed about you immediately was you sounded good. And I looked and I realized why. You had a lapel mic, a lavalier in your shirt. You thought that through before we officially started. Like in the first couple of seconds, I noticed you were zooming your camera in just right. You've got the thing over your shoulder, which is a poster that says, that talks about the ability to simplify. And the ability to simplify means eliminate unnecessary. Well, maybe you can read it.
The ability to simplify means to eliminate the unnecessary so that the necessary may speak.
Yeah. And I thought, this is a person who cares about the details right to that level. Your jacket looks nice, but there's also something underneath it that makes an impression that I hadn't seen before. But it's these little touches that I noticed about you instantly. And I said, I know this is going to be great. And I appreciate you putting in all the effort for all the little details and giving up a night with your daughter to be here. For anyone who wants to go check out your site, see, this is the thing. I'm going to send them over to simplicity.ca. It's spelled S-Y-M. Sorry?
Yeah, you can send them over to simplicity.ca with an I too. It'll get there, mercifully.
So they'll get there, but I would like for them to get more of what we just got here. There isn't an extension of you on that site. There is no way to say, I dig this guy's worldview. I love the books that he reads. I love the way that he thinks about these books. I want more of Matt. And on the site, there's a little bit, but it's not really more of Matt. It's not really more of your system. I would love
Here's the easiest that. Way. The info at simplicity.ca still goes straight to my inbox.
Perfect.
There's the easiest way.
If somebody wants to connect with everywhere. That, do it. Yeah. Do it. And I'm so happy to have had time to spend with you. I want to thank the two sponsors who made this interview happen. Guys, if you like this program and you want to say thank you to the people who made this possible, go check out hostgator.com/Mixergy and check out clickfunnels.com/Mixergy. Thanks, Matt.
Cheers.